And the defense kept the Packers in it, and they beat the Rams yesterday 24-10. Now, the WGTD forecast from the National Weather Service. Skies mostly sunny today, a high of 72, some 11 degrees warmer than normal for this time of year. It'll be breezy today, winds out of the west at 10 to 25. Then colder air settling in tonight, a low of 45, mostly sunny, chilly tomorrow, a high of 58. Expanded forecast warming up a bit on Wednesday with a high around 62. A slight chance of some rain on Thursday, another round of colder air for the weekend with highs stuck in the 50s. Right now we have partly cloudy skies in the Kenosha area. Temperature reading of 62 degrees, winds out of the southwest at 12 miles an hour. I'm David Cole, WGTD News. The morning show with Gregory Berg is coming up.
Support for WGTD's morning show comes from the generosity of the family and friends of the late Frank and Beverly Falduto, two lifelong Kenoshans who devoted much of their lives to the community in general and to WGTD in particular. Mr. Falduto played an essential role in creating WGTD nearly 40 years ago and later served as station manager and occasional morning show co-host. And we welcome you to the Monday morning show. I'm Gregory Berg. It scarcely seems possible, but it has been 10 years since the first nonprofit leadership conference was presented by the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. And this has turned out to be a very exciting and potentially transformative event for a number of nonprofit organizations and leaders here in southeastern Wisconsin. A chance for them to come together, share ideas, share horror stories, share visions of hope for the good work which they hope to do on behalf of the greater community, and an opportunity to hear from really important, often very influential leaders, those who have made a difference in other places. It has been an exciting thing to see, and for 10 years it has made a really, really big difference here in the Kenosha Racine area. And so the 10th annual event is coming up on Tuesday, the 20th of October. And for this very special event, they are exceptionally excited to bring someone of national renown in this field, Richard Harwood, founder and president of the Harwood Institute for Public Innovation. So this is a nonprofit based in Bethesda, Maryland, which works with private citizens, individuals, and with organizations all across the country, helping people find more exciting and effective ways to collaborate together and bring more of a sort of collective voice to some of the most vexing problems that challenge all of us and to make life better for all of us. And so it is with great excitement that he is announced as the keynote speaker for this event coming up. We have with us in the studios, first of all, Deborah Karp, who has been so instrumental in putting these nonprofit leadership conferences together. She is Internal Director of Community Engagement for the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. And also joining us is Allie Hagg, who is Vice President for Investor Relations for the United Way of Racine County. The United Way has been a very key supporter of this event, both in terms of sort of depth and breadth and consistency. They've made a huge difference in the viability of this conference. So they are participating again today. This year, and Allie's also excited to share with us some of the ways in which they've taken, that is, the local chapter of the United Way, have taken some of the recommendations and strategies suggested by Richard Harwood, very much taken them to heart, and he's going to tell us about the difference which it has made. So first of all, right here in the studio, Deborah Karp and Allie Haig, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Good morning.
Good to have you here. And Deborah, of course, you've been here quite a number of times. And via the telephone, Richard Harwood, we welcome you to the morning show as well.
Good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Deborah, let's look back for 10 years, first of all. I'm trying to remember, were you on board for the 10th? I mean, for the first one 10 years ago?
I was thinking you were. Yeah, 2006, because this is 15, it's the 10th time, so yeah.
Right. So when this began, what were your hopes and what were your trepidations about this? I mean, did you have a sense that this was the greatest idea ever and that this was going to fly like a balloon with no problem? Or in that first event, were you wondering if there would in fact be the interest you hoped?
Well, I guess I never have no worries about stuff. But I think that it really filled a need in the community. When we started doing our programming for nonprofit capacity building, there was nothing like this. And so, what we have found over the years, this is not the only program we do for nonprofits, but people value the opportunity to network and get together even more, or as much, I should say, anyway, as the content, what the presenters give them, what the breakout sessions offer them. I think they appreciate those things as well. But the opportunity to come together and meet with peers, meet with people in other organizations, and to begin to even talk about, which is our theme for this year's conference, the idea of collaborating, you have to be able to see each other. Hmm. And so I do think that it was really welcome. I can't remember the numbers in the first year, we did it at Case High School the first year. It was kind of pulled together. It was fine. It was just a very different event now that we have the student center at UW Parkside, and it feels more like an official conference.
A little more polished.
Yeah, a lot more polished, yeah. But, yeah, it's been a great event, and I think people anticipate it every year. We try to keep it very affordable for nonprofits. This year we actually have scholarships that the United Way of Racine County has made possible for people to attend the conference at a really discounted rate. So, yeah, it's pretty exciting. Mm.
I suppose part of the issue is that people that are involved in nonprofits so often are just kind of run ragged by the responsibilities that they face. I mean, the typical nonprofit, by its very nature, is not going to have sort of an excess of staff looking for things to do. I mean, people have their plates full just keeping their own operation really sustained and flourishing. And that doesn't necessarily just allow then in the normal course of a normal day for this networking to occur with other people finding themselves in the same situation.
Yeah, I think the irony of that, of course, is that you're absolutely right, that they would be more successful if they were able and made a real effort to get out there and network and collaborate and talk. Yet people get very, caught up in the day-to-day, all the urgent stuff instead of the more important kinds of vision and community-wide kind of work that really needs to happen.
Allie is nodding her head so she can identify, even at a place like the United Way, which of course is a larger organization than some nonprofits, but nevertheless, I'm sure you have experienced the same thing we're talking about.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think for us as an organization, it's nice because we're able to market it to our partners, those that we fund, and they're able to attend an event like this and hear about best practices and learn about things that they might not be able to because their funding is limited and their time is limited. So I think this conference provides a lot of opportunities to local nonprofits to not only network, but to learn about things that they might not learn about on their daily lives. So it's a very impactful event, and we are very proud to be a sponsor of it.
Richard Harwood, we should bring you in at this moment because you can bring a real national perspective to this. I suspect that the Kenosha Racine area is not unique in what we're describing, and probably there are a whole lot of places across the country that even now don't have this kind of event, which facilitates this kind of collaboration. What kind of things do you see across the country?
Well, first, I think you're right, Greg. The conference that UW Parkside is putting on and has done for 10 years is a real gift to the community and is a real asset for the community. And not every community is able to put on a conference like this. What I see across the country, and I suspect may be true in Racine and Kenosha is that, you know, look, the folks who work in nonprofits, it's a calling. There's a deep yearning among the folks who work in nonprofits to make a difference, to step forward, to be impactful. But there are so many things that are working against that in communities. The ways in which we talk about issues, our inability to get together and work collectively, the funding cycles that sort of come and go for nonprofits. And so what I see over and over and over again is how can we get on a better path of possibility and hope, bring people together, and restore our sense of belief that we can actually come together and get things done and make a difference.
Deborah Karp, I want you to say a word about the invitation issued to Mr. Harwood to be a part of this special 10th anniversary conference. Why were you so anxious for him to come, and what does it mean to have someone of his national reputation be a part of this?
Well, this actually came out of almost like a grassroots effort. There were a number of nonprofits. There is a leader of a nonprofit in Racine who really, she sort of took the initiative, Mary Beth Popchuk with Lakeside Curative, took the initiative to begin this conversation about bringing in somebody of like maybe a higher visibility or more nationally renowned to come to our community as part of this event, as well as for other activities in the community. And so it was an interesting thing, because normally it's us trying to figure out, well, who do we want to bring in as a keynote speaker? But we got together with the group, and Rodney Prunty, the CEO of the United Way of Racine County, was part of the group. And there were some other people from United Way there as well. And they had, you know, seen Rich speak before. They knew about his message. They were very excited about his message around collective impact. And we pulled together the resources from this group of people from other nonprofits to be able to bring in Rich. And I think his message is very timely. His experience is also just really relevant for, you know, any community across the country, but particularly with Racine and Kenosha right now at this time. Mm-hmm.
We're speaking today on The Morning Show about the 10th Annual Nonprofit Leadership Conference, which is coming up at UW Parkside on Tuesday, October 20th. We have with us Deborah Karp from UW Parkside and Allie Hagg, who is from the Racine chapter of the United Way. And with us on the telephone, Richard C. Harwood, founder and president of the Harwood Institute for Public Innovation. Mr. Harwood, before we find out a little more about what you plan to talk about at the Leadership Conference, let's find out a little bit about who you are, where you come from originally, and maybe at least something about the path which ultimately led you to where you are now and doing the important work that you're doing on behalf of nonprofits all across the country.
Sure. You know, I started the Institute when I was 27 years old, which is about 27 years ago. Seems like a long time ago now. And it really, Greg, came out of a number of things. One, I'd worked for a couple of really great nonprofits, but at the time I was frustrated that too many organizations were afraid to get dirt under their fingernails and do the really hard work that I thought needed to take place. Second, by the time I was 23, I'd worked on 20 political campaigns. The last one, I was a young aide to a presidential candidate, and all the candidates I worked for were great people, but their campaigns were not. They were about striking fear into people's heart, dividing people, and essentially winning at any cost. Third, I think for me, you know, I'm a person of faith, and my faith told me that community is about our mutual responsibility to one another. It's about how we repair breaches in society. And so many of the things that I was experiencing and seeing didn't really fit with that. And then last, and I'll talk a little about this in my talk, you know, I was sick as a kid. I was diagnosed with cystic fibrosis, and through that experience, I really learned what it means to feel invisible, to feel as though you're not seen and heard, to feel that a system, in this case the healthcare system that was supposed to help me heal, really chewed me up and spit me out. And so at a very young age, I sort of learned what it means and what I'm fighting for now, which is that, you know, I think every individual should be afforded dignity. I think everyone should be seen and heard in our communities. I really do believe that community is a common enterprise, that we can't go it alone on our own, and that we need each other, and yet we need to find better ways to come together and make that work, not just for some of us, but for all of us in our communities.
Well put. What would you say are the most significant ways in which the work that you do and the kind of needs that you and your that your institute address have changed over the last 27 years. I mean, what does this feel like now compared to 27 years ago when you first began the Harwood Institute for Public Innovation? I mean, were the challenges for the most part largely the same, at least in their essence, or has the landscape changed pretty dramatically over that time?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Greg. When we first started doing this work, we were doing a lot of work with the news media and with large collaborations around healthcare and some other issues. And, you know, we were innovating all the time. All the work that we do now that Deb and Ali have referred to, you know, we didn't have. We basically created along the way, often out of necessity and often out of failing. You know, just things weren't working that we were trying. And so I think, you know, maybe about 10 years ago, what we realized, and this was sort of the major shift for us, what we realized was as we were working with people, we had to teach people increasingly how to do the work that we were partnering around. And what we found is when we stepped back is we realized, oh my gosh, we had been creating a practice about what it means to engage in community life and create change and create impact in ways that are really rooted in communities and reflect people's shared aspirations. So I think for us, what's really changed is our work now is a practice. It has, you know, we teach and coach people in it. It has an orientation about being turned outward toward your community. And then there are a set of practices that we actually teach people to help them come together with others to create change. One of the quick thing, you know, the landscape itself, I'd say, has become more complicated over these 25 or so years. The role of funders has changed. The sense of people's frustration with politics has only deepened. People's sense of, in many cases, feeling, in some cases, isolated or fragmented from one another has only deepened and increased. And so, unfortunately, I think the challenges that we face have deepened. Last thing. While the challenges have deepened, the sense of yearning among Americans to come out from their homes and join with others to make a difference has also deepened. And that's where I think our opportunity is.
Mm-hmm. The title of your, or name of your institute has these words, public innovation, in them. Mm-hmm. And I find that really striking, that that probably a lot of other agencies or organizations or institutes that want to try to make a difference might not necessarily shine such a bright light on the notion of innovation. Why do you think that term needs to be so central in all of this?
Because if we knew how to solve many of the challenges that are before us, we would have done it by now, first of all. Second, I think, you know, let me say, if I can, what it's not, because when people hear that phrase, they, one often thinks that it's the new shiny object, that public innovation is about something that is, you know, sounds sophisticated, that it's expensive, that we have to raise a lot of money for it. And to me, it actually means just the opposite. To me, public innovation is how do we clear the brush that's in our way from seeing what really matters to people, and really understanding what matters to people, what's significant in their life, what they're really trying to achieve, and how do we get focused on that? How do we begin to understand what are some of the underlying conditions about trust, about a sense of fragmentation, about people being divided from one another, you know, all really basic things? How is it that we get focused on those basic things, because those are things often in the way of us moving forward? To me, it's about how do we step forward and bring ourselves into community life in a way where we're focused on being relevant and significant in people's lives and creating impact, and not getting so lost in process and in all these sophisticated programs that, honestly, what I keep finding takes us farther and farther away from the things that matter to people. So for me, public innovation is about getting to the essence of things, focusing on those things that matter, and being crystal clear on what you think might help to create change that makes people's lives better. It's not about us. It's about the people we're trying to serve.
As you do your work, and would it be proper to characterize what you do as in some way, are you doing the work of the proverbial consultant who comes to town and observes and has a clipboard and then starts writing down all of the things that aren't quite right, that need to be better, that need to be changed? Is that at least one facet of the work that you do?
Please, no. You know, if you could see me, you would see me cringing as you mentioned that.
I sort of figured, but...
No, we are the opposite of consultants. You know, look, consultants come in oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes come in and, you know, observe things, write a report for you, tell you what you need to do, and then leave.
Right.
Right, and... you know, part of the reason why I got into this work is because I'm tired of that. You know, that's how I experienced doctors in my own life, honestly. And so for me, what our work is about is that, first of all, the people we work with, like folks in Racine and the United Way or other places, Racine is not my community, it's your community, right? When we work with folks in Mobile, Alabama, it's not my community, it's their community. So the actors in this work is the folks who live in the communities with whom we're working. Our role is to teach this practice, to coach people in the practice, to enable them to make this practice that we've developed over the years their own, to make it their own, for it to be their own for them, you know, and for people in communities like Racine and Kenosha and other places across Wisconsin and other places, for people to be able to shape their own futures in ways that reflect the things that matter to them and that they value and in ways that are rooted in their aspirations. And I often think of myself as the anti-consultant. In fact, we have coaches who walk beside people, and our coaches have really strict directions. They're not allowed to lead meetings for people. They're not allowed to write memos for folks. They're not allowed to develop your strategy. Those are all things people in communities need to do for themselves. Our coaches can walk beside people to help them learn the practice, apply it in ways that make sense to them, and support them in those efforts and get out of their way. Hmm.
It sounds like you also value the notion of each and every organization being treated as its own unique entity, facing its own unique set of problems, although, you know, generally speaking, a lot of nonprofits are facing some of the same issues, but each one has to sort of confront it in their own particular way. And I think probably enough people have dealt with consultants who come to town with a sort of a one particular bag of tricks, which they believe are going to make the difference in any and all organizations. It sounds like that is not at all the approach which you like.
Yeah, I really believe that in order for us to create the kind of communities we all value, we meaning people who live in communities, need to make more intentional choices and judgments about understanding their communities and creating efforts that help communities move toward their shared aspirations. Those intentional choices and judgments vary by community, they vary by organization, they vary by individuals, and so our hope is to equip people to make those intentional choices and judgments on their own and also together with others, because no matter how good an organization is, no matter how good an individual leader is, most of the challenges we face in communities can't be solved by a single organization or a single leader acting alone.
Mm-hmm. For those of you just joining us, we're talking with Richard C. Harwood, founder and president of the Harwood Institute for Public Innovation. And he is coming to town to speak at the 10th Annual Nonprofit Leadership Conference at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside in their beautiful student center. Joining us also here in the studios, Deborah Karp from UW-Parkside, and Allie Haag, who is with the Racine chapter of the United Way. Allie, I couldn't help but notice as Mr. Harwood was talking, well, actually both of you were nodding and smiling and very much in agreement, but I know, Allie, you have worked with the Harwood Institute, you and the local Racine chapters of United Way. So I know that this has made quite a difference for you. Tell us about your interaction with the Harwood Institute.
Yes, I'm excited to speak because I hear Mr. Harwood speak and it's inspiring for me. It's inspiring for our organization. You know, the relationship between the Harwood Institute and United Way makes sense. Many people have heard the term Live United, and that's our philosophy. We honestly believe that everybody has stake in our community and that we can only make change by working together. And the Harwood Institute gave us the tools to make sure that we are incorporating everybody's voice. And that's something that I think we've really accelerated on and we've done a great job with. We've taken the recommendations from the training that we went through and we've implemented them locally. And it's gone in to feed our strategic planning process. We have a report out to the community. And basically what it comes down to is us sitting down with our community members on every aspect, not just community leaders, but anybody that wants to share their opinions on what their dreams, their aspirations, and their concerns are for our community. And that was very important for us for our strategic planning, because although we have statistics to tell us these are what the problems are in our community, unless we had the voice of our community members stating this is what we feel are concerns, we would never be successful in any results that we're trying to achieve. And that's one thing that the Harwood Institute taught us. We've had over 30 different community conversations with over 350 participants, and it's really helped us achieve a lot of knowledge on our community that we can compare both qualitative and quantitative, and it makes it more impactful. We are saying these are what our community members need to have happen within our community. And we're also able to say this is what our community perceives as an issue, and maybe the statistics don't support that, so we need to understand why there's a misconception there. So for us, it's taught us a lot, and it's made a lot of great work happen within our organization. We're so excited that he's coming to the community and that he's going to be able to speak to other nonprofits, because he is for collective impact. The Harwood Institute believes heavily in everybody having stake in the community, everybody being at the table, and us working as a team to make a better community. And that's what United Way lives for. That's what we represent. So it's a perfect combination.
Right. I'm struck, as she was describing that, Mr. Harwood, that your story about contending with cystic fibrosis as a young child and how you learned in a way that maybe you otherwise would not have experienced what it's like to be invisible, another way to put it, to be unheard. And it sounds like one of the bedrock principles of what you do with nonprofit organizations is to make sure that the unheard are heard.
Yeah, you know, I have vivid memories of doctors and nurses and specialists, you know, surrounding my bed, all talking about me, but never talking with me. And in that process, they missed what I was experiencing as a kid. They missed what was terrifying me. They missed sort of how I was experiencing the medical care they were providing. They missed what I really needed, which actually weren't necessarily more tests, but were some other things. You know, in our communities, it's the same thing. There are people, I think of single moms who have, you know, a kid or two who are trying to make ends meet, and there are all sorts of challenges in that individual's life and in their family lives. And the question for me is, do we really understand what that family is up against? And even more importantly, it's not just that single mom, for instance, wants her challenges fixed, like making sure streets are safe or that their kids go to a good public school. It's that single mom and her kids, they're trying to create something in their lives. They're trying to move someplace better, not just be in the place where they are. And do we really understand what they're trying to achieve and how they're struggling to do that so that we can actually give people a leg up in their lives and help them enable their aspirations for what they're trying to do in their lives?
That's a lofty goal, but I suppose in terms of actually achieving it, it gets complicated when it comes down to the specifics of making that happen.
It does, but it's doable. You know, I've seen in you know, communities across the country, and, you know, we're doing work in Australia, and our work has been pulled into about 35 or 40 other countries. You know, we're seeing that it's possible when people come together and work together. You know, this is really important, Greg. Our work is not about sitting around in a circle and holding hands and singing Kumbaya. You know, there are tough challenges. There are lots of forces in the way of creating change. There are lots of disagreements in communities, legitimate disagreements in communities, about what we value and where we want to move. So this is really hard work, but I've seen it happen. I've seen people's lives get better. I've seen communities sort of change directions. It's happening in Youngstown, Ohio right now, and so among other places. And so it is lofty in the sense that it taps into our ideals. But I think more than anything, and this is something I'm going to speak about at UW Parkside, is I think more than anything, Americans want to be builders. It's part of our DNA. It's part of who we are. It's part of our story as a country. And I think people want to get back to building things together to improve communities. It's not going to happen overnight. We got to go step by step. There are going to be a lot of setbacks. But I do think it's possible in real practical terms.
What is your advice when it comes to the seemingly mundane, straightforward matter of just getting a lot of different constituents into one room?
Yeah.
Maybe not to hold hands and sing Kumbaya, but to get a lot of different people, maybe of very different perspectives or from very different places in life, together talking and sharing. And I don't mean leaders of various nonprofits. I'm speaking more of when the nonprofits go back to their various sectors and begin doing the hard work with which they've that they've taken upon themselves. What is your advice, even on that very basic a level, on making those kind of moments matter most?
Yeah. Well, look, you know, the good news is the United Way of Racine is doing this. So part of my message would be give Allie a call and let her show you sort of what they've been doing and how they've been doing it, because you have a real asset now in the region. But look, here's the thing. I think we need to engage people in small groups, by and large, 10, 15 people at a time. Our institute, for instance, has developed discussion guides which will help produce a productive conversation as opposed to just people griping or pointing fingers or saying, you know, just here are my personal desires, because I think we need to get beyond that. So I think we need to go out into our community. We need to bring people together in small groups. We need to go where people are, not to our offices. We need to engage enough people over time so that we begin to see patterns across the community, so we have a deep understanding. And then here's what's really important about this, because a lot of people think of the Institute's work as just community conversations. What I often like to say is, if you like our community conversations, you'll like the 95% of our other work, right? And so the other part of this, which I know, you know, Allie and her and Rodney and others at the United Way are thinking about and working on, is how do you take what you've learned and actually turn it into strategies and action, right? That's the test, because one of the things that Americans are saying over and over again is, don't come talk to me if you're not going to listen to what I have to say and at least consider what it means for what we're going to do together. That's the compact we're making with people when we engage them now. And so what I say to folks that we work with is, if you're not interested in that compact, don't bother engaging people, because you're just going to create more skepticism and cynicism, and we don't need you doing that.
Hmm.
Right? So let's get serious about this, and if you're going to do it, we've got to take what we're learning and incorporate it into what we're going to do so that we can actually make a go of things in our community.
Hmm. Very true.
Allie, maybe you should speak to just that, the question that I raised, this matter of getting out there and mm-hmm. actually gathering the voices of those whom you want to hear from. What kind of lessons did you and your colleagues at the United Way maybe learn as you set about doing that? I guess I raised the question because I suspect it's not as easy a matter as we might think, or maybe it is. Maybe, in fact, it is as simple a matter as just going someplace and listening.
Yeah, it was difficult when we started. What Rich referenced as to people saying, don't expect me to come and talk unless you have plans to do action based off of what I'm stating. Many of the people that come and sit around the table with us have sat around tables many times before, and they are tired of talking about the issues and not seeing any change take place. And we took note of that. In the beginning, it was difficult to get people to show up, but after we had them show up and we provided them with follow-up, we make sure that we email those that we've had participate in our conversations with follow-up conversations and what we learn from those conversations. In addition to that, on a yearly basis, we hold a report out session where we create a very detailed report of what it is that we found, different themes, different ways that our community feels that we are really achieving things and ways that they feel that we are not. And we invite all those people back to that report out session, and we tell them what it is that we found. And then we sit around tables with our partners, which we're known for. We collaborate, and we talk about what the issues are, and we try to find solutions to those issues. And like I mentioned before, we are utilizing these conversations to feed into our strategic planning. So we've done things now where we are starting to gear conversations towards specific topics. We are heavily involved with the community schools program at Knapp School and Racine Unified School District. When they were considering doing the community school, we did community conversations with the educators and administrators as well as the parents to learn about what those needs are that they have for that school specifically there. And now we are taking all of that information and we are using it for planning the community schools for the recommendations of the programming that should be implemented in that school, as well as looking at the statistics and what that tells us locally. So we really are trying hard to implement it, whatever we are learning from these conversations, to into our partners' work as well as our own. And it's been extremely successful so far.
I suspect, Mr. Hartwood, this is a success story that you has been repeated across the country and in other kinds of organizations as well.
It is. We're seeing this, you know, as you said, across the country, whether it's in Youngstown, Ohio, or Battle Creek, Michigan, or Mobile, Alabama, or Las Vegas, Nevada, or Bakersfield, California, you know, and what's so great about it, you know, going back to the early part of our conversation, I just saw the report that the United Way put out. It's on my desk as I'm talking to you, and I'm looking at it. And I have to tell you, I was blown away by it. And I walked into my executive vice president's office, and I said, you know, this is an incredible example of what communities can do. We should use this and send it to some of our other partners. So, with Ali's permission, I'm gonna do that. So I've been doing this for 30 years, and I still get very excited when I hear folks like Deb and Ali talk about what they're doing locally, and what it means to them, and when I hear that across communities. Because to me, it demonstrates that we still do have the ability to come together and get things done. We still do have the ability to restore our belief that actually we can do it together. And what we need are courageous leaders like Ali and Deb and others who are willing to step forward in their own communities to show the way and to gather people and to make a go of things.
You have time for two more questions?
I certainly do.
Great.
Great.
Again, we're over the phone. We have Richard C. Harwood from the Harwood Institute for Public Innovation with us in the studios. Deborah Karp from Parkside and Ali Haig from United Way. Mr. Harwood, I couldn't help but notice that in two of the books that you have written, the word hope appears. I just heard a couple of days ago a chapel presentation given by somebody who happens to head up something called the Hospitality House or Hospitality Center in Racine, which is a daytime center for the homeless that offers all kinds of different things. And in the course of his remarks, he talked about how in many cases the kind of people to whom his organization ministers find it very difficult to hope, that it hurts to hope, because in so many cases hope leads to hope being dashed. I mean, the disappointment that something you hope is going to signal a turnaround or a new chapter or something kind of turns to dust. And after a while, you just hate to even hope in the first place for the experience of having those hopes dashed, which is so painful. And I'd never really stopped to think about that, because I think those of us who live more privileged lives or lives that are cushioned by a fair amount of comfort really are not acquainted with that kind of a life in which just the very act of hoping might be a real source of pain or would really represent a stepping out of real courage to dare to hope for something better. And it occurs to me that this conversation is not only about people who are struggling terribly in their own personal lives, but in a sense, the organizations with which you work also are probably prone to some of those same dangers. That is, in hoping for a better world or hoping for a better community, it can be difficult sometimes to hope when so often hope doesn't quite lead down the path that you envisioned.
Yeah, you know, you've you've put your finger exactly on the spot of why I do this work. You know, when all is said and done, you know, I think this work fundamentally is about engendering a sense of possibility and hope for folks. I think the challenge in our society, particularly with sort of all the advertising we see, all the political shenanigans that we have to endure, all the challenges that we see, is we have peddled at times a sense of false hope. We have made promises to people that we haven't kept. We have raised expectations when we knew we couldn't, a community or a neighborhood or a school couldn't turn the corner that quickly. We have said we would bring resources to places that we didn't fulfill. And, you know, to me, the most basic thing that we do in this work is engendering a sense of authentic hope that something is possible. But in order to do that, and this is why I've stayed so committed to this work and why I believe so deeply in it, is that we need to get real about things. We can't pretend. We need to have reality in our line of sight. We need to understand the challenges that are before us if we actually want to go down a path. We need to be clear-headed and clear-minded about and clear-eyed about what it's really going to take. And we need to level with people about how quickly or how long it might take to create some change, and so that people's hopes don't outstrip what is even possible. And I think, you know, honestly, Greg, I think we have an obligation in this work to focus on those things and be real about these things, because we're playing with something that is the most central aspect to someone's life, which is my life. Is there any possibility that my life could be better tomorrow than it is today? And we need to be careful about that. And it's why, for instance, when you ask me about public innovation, and you know, so many of my colleagues want to talk about the next big shiny object and how sophisticated we need to be. You know, hope is created by some of the most basic things in our lives. Can I trust you? Do I believe you understand me? Do you see me? Are you willing to work with me? Can we take just a step forward to make something better? I know you can't solve everything overnight, so please don't promise me that. Let's just take a couple steps forward together, and let's build a better trajectory with ever-expanding momentum and ever-deepening confidence that we have the capabilities to move forward.
Wow. That's very well put. But as you're speaking that, I can just imagine all the people who need to hear that, who with probably the best of intentions have kind of stepped over that line that you are talking about and in a sense raised people's hopes in a way that ultimately is probably not healthy, that in some ways is actually counterproductive.
Absolutely. Look, you know, particularly for nonprofits, and I know Deborah and Allie see this all the time, and we all struggle with it. I struggle with it. You know, we have funders who we believe if we raise expectations and raise hopes, we'll get more support. We have volunteers who, if we believe we make, you know, extra special promises, somehow we'll get more volunteers. We believe if we raise our voice loud enough and make extra promises, we'll get up to be on your program or get on the front page of the local newspaper. But the fact is that, you know, we've got to look ourselves in the mirror and say, is that how we want to bring ourselves into the world? Is that how we want to do this work? Is that why we have this calling to improve people's lives and communities? And, you know, the vast, vast, vast majority of people I encounter who work in nonprofits and other organizations, they're there for all the right reasons. What we just have to keep doing is reminding ourselves of what those reasons are and engage in ways that stay true to them, which will make us more effective in the community. And what I've come to learn over 30 years of doing this work, it'll allow us to live our lives better and be more satisfied in the work that we're doing.
I would also be remiss if I didn't ask you about your book, Why We're Here, The Powerful Impact of Public Broadcasters When They Turn Outward, since you're talking to a public broadcaster.
Right.
So sounds like this is a book I need to look at. Can you just say a quick word about your word for public broadcasters and public broadcasting?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for raising that. You know, we have partnerships with all sorts of groups nationally, United Way Worldwide and AARP and Goodwill International and and American Libraries, and public broadcasting is one of them. We've done a lot of work with public broadcasting, including over time with Wisconsin Public Television and Public Radio. You know, as you know, Greg, and your listeners know, you know, what we've been working with public broadcasters on is how do they turn outward? How, much like Allie's trying to do, how is it that they understand where their communities are so that the work that they're doing both on air and off air can reflect those shared aspirations and contribute in the ways that make sense for public broadcasters to help their communities move forward? You know, the 1965 Public Broadcasting Act was all around how can public broadcasting help create and form communities. And so the question is, given the complexities of the world and the changes that have taken place, how is it can public broadcasters do that in the world we live in today?
Very good question. Absolutely. Well, I know that both Deborah and Allie are tremendously excited that you can come be a part of this 10th annual Nonprofit Leadership Conference coming up on the 20th of October. Deborah, in the couple of minutes that remain, sketch for our listeners just some of what is going to be offered at this year's event.
Okay. Well, actually, I did want to say that our event is different this year. We've typically had it in the afternoon, but it starts early in the morning at 7 o'clock registration, and it starts with a breakfast buffet and networking, followed by the keynote speech by Rich Harwood. And a question and answer session with the keynote speaker. We also are doing a panel, as I mentioned earlier, on greater impact together, lessons learned from collaboration. That includes a number of people from our own community who've been involved in successful collaborations and who are going to share both their successes and their struggles and give some insight into their experiences. And then that's followed by roundtable discussions on a variety of different topics. People can choose board leadership and development, fund development, marketing and communication, program planning and evaluation, or technology. And these will be facilitated discussions by experts, but a chance to really learn from one another as well and potentially identify some opportunities to collaborate. And so the conference is in the morning and ends at 1 o'clock on October 20th. And if people are interested in registering, you can register on the UW Parkside website. It's www.uwp.edu. And then click on continuing education, or it's /CE, continuing. Look up continuing education. That'd be the easiest thing. Click on conferences. And I must say that the registration closes on the 13th of October. However, you can also walk up on the day of the event and register at that time.
Very good. So we hope a lot of people are going to take advantage of what promises to be a terrific opportunity. And Allie, it was great to hear about the local perspective of the United Way and also the really strong way in which the United Way has been a supporter of this event. It sounds like it is so central to what you guys are all about.
It truly is. It truly is.
Allie Haig is Vice President for Investor Relations for United Way of Racine County. Deborah Karp, the Internal Director of Community Engagement for the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. And last and certainly not least, Richard C. Harwood, founder and president of the Harwood Institute for Public Innovation, the keynote speaker for the event coming up on Tuesday the 20th. Mr. Harwood, it was great to speak with you today. Thank you for your insights and for all the good work that you and your colleagues do.
Thanks for having me, and I can't wait to come to the community.
I'm Greg Reberg. Tomorrow on The Morning Show, singer Steve Lippia. You listen to him sing and you would swear it is the one and only Frank Sinatra. Steve Lippia is singing with the Kenosha Symphony Orchestra this coming weekend, and you'll meet him tomorrow on The Morning Show. And on Wednesday, also a musical program, but of a different bent, will preview the upcoming performances at the Milwaukee Florentine of Puccini's Madama Butterfly. Support for WGTD's Morning Show comes from the generosity of the family and friends of the late Frank and Beverly Falduto, two lifelong Kenoshans who devoted much of their lives to the community in general and to WGTD in particular. Mr. Falduto played an essential role in creating WGTD nearly 40 years ago and later served as station manager and occasional Morning Show co-host. Our weather forecast for southeastern Wisconsin and northeastern Illinois is for sunny, breezy conditions today with a high of 72 degrees. Those winds out of the west, 10 to 25 miles per hour. Breezy and a little cooler tonight, a low of 45 degrees. Sunny tomorrow and a high of just 58 degrees. Warming up a little bit on Wednesday with a slight chance of rain developing on Thursday. And chillier temperatures this weekend. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn.